Whether you're going veggie or vegan for 2019, or just looking for some easy ways to mix up your mealtimes, Sainsbury's has loads of new and exciting meat-free alternative options. Like Sainsbury's Love Your Veg Shroom Balls with jackfruit, edamame, coconut and lemongrass falafels, or roasted butternut and charred broccoli pizza. No wonder Sainsbury's was named Best Supermarket for Vegan Food 2018 in the Vegan Food UK Awards. Check out the range in selected stores and online.
Today we're down with ADP, yeah, you know me, the Juventus legend, the quiet champion, a man who survived it all, a busted knee, Serie B, partnering with Inzaghi, Alessandro the Great on Golazzo.
Golazzo!
Testa di Paolo Sousa, il pallone per Orlando, parte questo lungo lancio.
Del Piero, esterno straordinario, e la Juventus è in vantaggio. Quando sembrava che ormai le due squadre fossero quasi paghe del 2-2, Del Piero.
Yep, if you were in front of your TV or at the Dele Alpi on the 4th of December 1994, you will not forget that moment. Or perhaps that curiously low-key Bruno Pitzel commentary, perhaps the most famous goal of the decade, along with that one from Giorgio Ware. That was Del Piero winning in the 87th minute. An absolutely crucial tie as Juventus made their way back to title glory. A young Alessandro Del Piero, we've got a young Gabriele Marcotti here in the Galazzo HQ. Really look back on this quiet man who became the biggest player at the biggest club in Italy.
It wasn't supposed to happen this way. Like, he was supposed to do what Italian clubs, especially back then, expected talented young players to do. Either we send you endlessly on loan, or you come and you sit behind the adults. And obviously, he came to, I don't know if you have the squad list there, but the whole notion was that he would come into a Juve side and back up Roberto Baggio, who, you know, was only Roberto Baggio, right? The most expensive player in the history of Italian football at the time, or right around there. It caused all sorts of chaos and controversy when he signed. Very, very soon after he arrived, the club was like, you know what? Like, maybe we should put all our eggs in this younger guy's basket who earns a lot less money and doesn't have two bad knees, actually runs around the pitch, follows orders.
Yeah, Roberto Baggio, the biggest player in the world in the early 90s. And that squad list, since you mentioned it, Peruzzi as the first choice keeper. At the back, you've got the likes of Julio Cesar, Jürgen Kohler, Torricelli.
Jürgen Kohler, der Weltmeister.
Exactly.
Champion of the world.
Dino Baggio in midfield, a certain Antonio Conte, Angelo Di Livioso, Latino.
Antonio Conte was here.
Andreas Müller. And then up front, this was the team, basically the year that Del Piero joined. Baggio, Del Piero, Ravanelli and Gianluca Vialli. Extraordinary. So we start with that goal, but there are some. What do you think of when you think of Del Piero? The 19 seasons that he had at Juve.
In terms of Del Piero on the pitch, what I think of most is those long-range goals, obviously, like the
goal a la Del Piero.
Yeah, because, and they always seem to sort of, it always seems to me, like in my memory, it's not just one of those long-range strikes where he's, you know, he's running at pace, he's facing the goal, but there always seems to involve kind of like a little swivel of the hips before. And then he kind of strikes the ball through it. And we've seen other people sort of go and generate power and accuracy from long-range strikes. But he had his sort of very own way to do it, which fit his body type. And, you know, I think in terms of technical ability, he was right up there.
Mm. Yeah, one of the few players to have essentially a signature move that became part of, certainly in Italy, the kind of footballing vocabulary. All right, well, there's so many other stories. The goal at the World Cup, the tongue hanging out, the day of his goodbye. And, of course, that amazing standing ovation at the Bernabeu after he'd scored a brace in that really unexpected, glorious second part of his career. But let's start with that goal against Fiorentina and a little bit of Alessandro's pal, Eros.
Servirà di più per dirti
Edo Mazzotti obviously liked football and was friends with a number of footballers. He went to this phase where he owned his own plane, and he, you know, he often traveled around Europe. And it was like a running joke among certain Juve players at the time that if they needed to go somewhere and, you know, time was tight or whatever to make an appearance, if Eros wasn't on tour, hey, let's call him up and see if he wants to, you know, come along to go to like the Puma store in Lisbon.
If he had an airline, he could call it Eros.
He could have called it Eros. Yeah. In fact, that happened to me once. When
did you fly with Eros Ramazzotti?
No, I was shut out of it. We had to go, I think it was, we went to interview Marcello Lippi in Turin and Luciano Moggi as well, actually. Me and Gianluca Vialli when we wrote The Italian Job. And I remember, you know, nice meal, nice day in Turin, and we're driving back to Milan, and Luca's like, he gets like a text or something, or he does something with his phone, and he's like, oh, you know what? I might not come back with you on your flight. And I'm like, okay, like, yeah, I think I'm going to get a ride with Eros Ramazzotti. He's flying anyway. And I'm like, okay, like, you know, we both live in London. But so as it turned out, you know, I sat there like a fool for 3 hours at Malpensa eating crappy food while I called him to see how he was getting on. And he was like back in London, before my flight had even taken off, thanks to the powers of Eros Ramazzotti.
There's a great clip of Ali actually joining Eros on stage in Sydney, I guess. And he sang really badly, like this.
So then I discovered that this was a frequent thing. Like, you know, Eros Ramazzotti, when he had his time off, he loved flying to different European cities. So, you know, he was basically the Aero Uber of his day. You would just ring him up and be like, hey, you want to go here for a couple hours? And be like, sure. You know.
What a nice guy. Anyway, so now we were talking about that goal, which I think of all the many Del Piero memories, that's perhaps the definitive one. And it's the first real moment that I think he caught everyone's attention. He'd done well at Padova in Serie B, well enough for Juve to spring a little under 2 million. Obviously, these were different times for him.
Again, context, I think back then, the record in England would have been around 3.5 million.
And this was a teenager as
this
well.
This is 1992,
yeah. Basically. Well, let's go back to that day in 1994. And a little bit of context then here. Gab, Baggio is out. This is the biggest player in the world.
So Baggio is out. You know, Juventus, as you mentioned, and as we talked about before, they're really banging their heads against the wall because it's been so long since they won the title. Milan are absolutely dominating in Serie A. They've had that incredible unbeaten streak. They're like the symbol of the well-run club. And Juventus, who for a long time throughout the 80s, obviously they're a wealthy club, but they always kind of made it a point of saying, well, we're not just going to go and throw money around on big name signings and stuff like that. You know, we'll pick and choose. We'll find our own stars like Michel Platini and stuff like that, who, you know, they didn't spend a lot of money for, but was actually out of contract when they signed him. Hmm. And after all that, you know, people get angry. And so around 1990 is when everything changes. And that's when they start chucking huge amounts of money around. Obviously, they sign Roberto Baggio, they'd signed Casiraghi for a lot of money as well, Gianluca Vialli for an absolute fortune. And they're just desperate, but Milan just keep winning. And they're partly outspending them, partly they make better choices. And so, you know, this season, again, they've got this incredible lineup of talent on paper. And then this was a goal that kind of show that, yeah, we can compete.
Right. And it actually kind of sparked them on their way to what was their first title in 9 years. So it's December. It was a freezing day at the Delhi Alpi. And we were there because it was the big game of that week. Juve taking on Fiorentina, always a massive affair. And it was going really, really badly. Marcello Lippi, who'd become Juve manager, watching on as his team go 2 goals behind to a Fiorentina side who in those days were one of the Sette Sorelle, one of the 7 notional contenders for the title any given season. And they were absolutely rocking the Delhi Alpi. 20 minutes to go, they had this 2-goal lead. Then Gianluca Vialli pops up with 2 goals in the space of 3 minutes. So at least Juve are going to get a point. The 87th minute, though, all of a sudden, a ball gets hoofed upfield from
the legendary Alessandro Orlando, who's the man who had arrived from Milan in a straight swap with Paolo Di Canio.
There you go. So Orlando, who's more or less at the halfway line, lobs a desperate ball upfield. The just-turned 20-year-old Alessandro Del Piero running onto it, and without the ball even touching the ground, that masterpiece.
Del Piero has made the run! Oh, what a goal for Del Piero! That's a beauty!
The season before was the season he arrived, the 93-94 season. They played him in the Primavera, the youth academy, and they won the Viareggio tournament, which is sort of this big youth tournament they have in Italy. But he was just so good that he started playing in the first team. And that first season, he got some European football, and he played 11 times in Serie A, you know, almost exclusively as a sub, but scored 5 goals. And I think that's when they realized we have something special on our hands. And that's a big part of the reason why they felt comfortable going into the season with Ravanelli, Vialli, Baggio, backed up by Del Piero. They figured, you've got sort of two central strikers. You've got a fantasista like Baggio, and you have another fantasista backing him up like Del Piero. That's actually pretty light by the standards of Serie A back then, especially when, you know, Baggio had all his knee injuries.
Yeah.
But still, that's how highly they thought of him.
Right. With 19 seasons he went on to have with Juventus, that first spell until 98, where there was kind of the watershed of that knee injury, was classic Del Piero. That's where the goal a la Del Piero, that's where they really came to the fore. He would classically receive the ball just on the kind of left-hand side of the penalty box, maybe shimmy past a couple of defenders, and then curl one into the top far corner. Again, yeah. And again, in Europe, in Italy, everywhere.
Stop fantastico di Del Piero. Incredibile aggancio, volante. Prova il tiro, rientrare ancora! Incredibile! Incredibile! Ancora lui!
Avanzata di Del Piero, uno contro uno con Kohler. Ancora Del Piero, cerca lo spazio per il tiro. Ancora Del Piero. E il suo pallonetto, un gol stupendo! Un gol incredibile da parte di Del Piero. Alessandro Del Piero.
With that typical swivel and turn that I talked about earlier. It was remarkable. What was remarkable about that period, too, is don't forget, 95-96, they win the Champions League in Rome on penalty kicks against Ajax. And it is this front three of Vialli, Ravanelli, and Del Piero. And even back then, what strikes you and what really set him apart was how hard he worked. You know, this was something that, you know, we were used to fantasisti like Roberto Baggio, like Mancini, like dating myself, but gotta represent for Inter as well, the legendary Evaristo Beccalossi, Beck, who wouldn't, you know, they're like, all right, my job here is to be the flair player, the luxury player, right? Del Piero, you know, he was like those puppy dogs who you just throw the ball and just runs. You know, despite being obviously initially, later it would change, but very physically slight, he interpreted that perfectly. And he gave them, like, Juventus a physicality coupled with technique that very few teams had at that time.
Yeah. He also earned a nickname from L'Avvocato Gianni Agnelli.
Yeah, he called him Pinturicchio when he started out. And the thinking there was,
I mean, classically, the Agnelli nicknames generally were a little bit disparaging, though. I think this certainly felt like a little bit of a snub. The little painter, a guy who was kind of in the Serie B of Renaissance painting.
But I think he had compared Baggio to Raffaello, who is, you know, probably some would say next.
That was
to
one of the nicknames. Do you remember that Cornelio Bagnato was the other one?
The wet rabbit, yeah. But when he came with the Pinturicchio, it was within the context of Raffaello. And Raffaello, probably along with Giotto, the greatest Italian Renaissance painter. And then when they asked him about the Del Piero stuff, it was a way of saying, like, okay, well, were he with us today? Agnelli would say, well, you know, I did it because I didn't want to put pressure on Del Piero or feel that Baggio would be undermined. So he called them sort of Pinturicchio, who's a sort of minor, sort of eternal apprentice type figure. Because I think at the time, too, he had really bought into that idea that, you know, he had to bide his time. Little did he know, of course, that
his time was now. You're listening to Galazzo, the totally Italian football show. 19 seasons Del Piero spent at Juve, 11 of them as captain. He owns the club records for most goals and appearances. He was player of the year in 1997, and then remarkably, again, 11 years later in 2008. In between the two, you had another pivotal moment in his career, again in winter, up in Udine in 1998, after that World Cup, which had seen what seemed to be a little bit his story with the national team, disappointments, missed opportunities at a crucial moment in that quarterfinal with France. And then in a 2-2 draw away at Udinese, right in the final minutes, he does his anterior and posterior cruciate ligaments. And all of a sudden, this incredible career looks like it's just hit the buffers.
Yeah, and that World Cup, as so often happened, again, you know, marked by sort of Roberto Baggio, who always seemed to kind of reappear whenever there was a major tournament. You know, I'm not sure we'll get to what he achieved later in career and how he extended his longevity.
Mm.
For a lot of people, including me, you know, if I were to write a letter to my younger self, I would have said, man, you got Del Piero all wrong, because I thought he was done after the injury.
Mm. Took him a long time. He missed the rest of that season. And I think it took him a while to get back to being, as you say, he changed.
There's a debate that he maybe never did, you know, and that he had to reinvent himself as a footballer. I was never a big Del Piero fan, not because I couldn't appreciate his ability or because he played for Juventus, but because he kind of felt, post-injury, he felt manufactured, right? He felt like the kind of guy who, I think in 2000, he signed some sort of enormous contract and was the highest paid player in the world or close to it. He felt like something that, okay, so Juventus have poured all this money into him. He's not the player he was before. We don't blame him. He was just injured. He wasn't even somebody who necessarily generated emotions, because he was so quiet, so low key. You know, he'd get fouled, fall over, and he'd never complain or remonstrate. He always had this kind of little, like, sort of
ironic half smile, rueful grin.
Yeah, which drove other people crazy. The other thing too is, you know, and I'm not making fun of this, but between him and Inzaghi in those years, I'm not saying they didn't get fouled all the time and won legitimate penalties,
right,
but within the context of the narrative of Italian football, all these fouls that Juve seemed to get all the time, and it was always the two of them, you know, it did kind of feel like, you know, hey, you deplorables, get back in your basket, because the deep state's taking over, you know?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned Inzaghi, because that was a partnership which started well and then rapidly went off the rails, and they were very much... How would you say in English, separati in casa, no? The two players coexisting.
The odd couple.
But, yeah.
Yeah. I think a lot of that had to do as well with personality. Because, you know, Pippo Inzaghi is Pippo God, right? You know, sex, yoga, and rock and roll. Like, he is the guy who's always in your face. In some ways, he's the opposite of Del Piero, right? Because Inzaghi did not have all this technical ability. He did not have all this natural ability. You talk to most people, tell you his brother Simone was a far more skillful player than Pippo Inzaghi. What Pippo Inzaghi had was this incredible tenacity, which Del Piero also had. But Inzaghi had to kind of earn and fight and scrap all the way through. He was also, I'm going to call him selfish, because it seems like a cliche when we call strikers selfish, but yeah, he's the kind of guy who sort of, you know, shoot from 40 yards out. He worked hard on the pitch, but he didn't necessarily work hard within the context of the team, or he wasn't seen like that.
Mm.
Whereas Del Piero was the opposite. Del Piero did everything the manager asked of him all the time.
And there was a season when whether these two would ever pass between them became the big story in Italian football, that everyone was always talking about and always interviewing them, you know, what is going on between the two of them.
I think this is all mostly one way, to be honest.
Right.
You know, I still think this was Inzaghi bitching and moaning and fitting into that narrative of Del Piero is just a construct. You know, they're trying to keep alive somebody who was great but is no more.
Do you remember when, and this must have been awkward for him, Juve, in the spirit of trying to create a sense of affection for this player and the club made Del Piero into their mascot. They invented this kind of symbol called Alex, a cartoon figure called Alex, and each match day there was a guy in a great big Alex outfit. And it was clearly a reference to Del Piero. He was kind of like a generic boy figure, but with dark hair and looked similar to Del Piero, similar nose. And it was almost like they were trying to create a real kind of sense of him being some kind of cultural phenomenon. Was that after the knee injury in 98? Well, I think it was probably before.
No, it was before.
Yeah.
It was before.
But it certainly fed into that whole feeling that Juve had decided this guy was going to be a star. And at the time, it did feel he was probably going to be one of the world greats.
He was a star, and he would have been one of the world greats, if not. I mean, and he still was. Yeah. But there was that period from, you know, where you felt like he was kind of being shoved down your throats by the powers that be, and people could see through him. And there was a lot of skepticism. You know, I think there was a belief that, you know, when Juve won the title in 01-02, the first Lippi title post Ancelotti, that, you know, he was kind of a passenger. And then, you know, when they won those titles again, the two that were stripped, unlawfully, of course, Mr. Agnelli, because of Calciopoli, again, he was there, but, you know, it was Trezeguet and Ibrahimovic, and he was a passenger, and Capello was kind of tolerating him. And it felt as if he's not really the reason there. He gets paid this enormous amount of money, but it's other people doing the heavy lifting. And he was kind of the pet of the Agnellis.
Although for me, I think that changed because, again, you'd had, returning to this idea of the fact that Del Piero was almost mandated by the powers that be. I think that certainly came through with Italy, 98, when a lot of people felt Baggio was the natural four for Christian Vieri, and it seemed that way on the pitch, but Del Piero got the nod against France in the quarterfinal. In 2000, Del Piero comes on, misses huge opportunities. Baggio's not the question this time, but Italy go out to the golden goal. But then the redemption of 2006, his goal in the...
That's the sea change.
2006.
What happens in that, I mean, we've touched upon that World Cup. And I think when the Champions League final was in Cardiff, Del Piero was there doing media. And he spent some time with us with the ESPN. And he was very forthcoming. He had a big chat off camera about his life at the time. Of course, he ended up moving to Australia and then to LA.
With a brief parenthesis in India, in Delhi.
Yeah, although that was one of those weirdo like IPL type things where you're there for 8 weeks. But yeah. And he talked about how that World Cup experience was, you know, he's like, you had all these kind of older players who are used to being superstars and who there were question marks about at that stage because they were older, and it's him, and it was taught to him, they kind of all put it to one side, and Lippi kind of made it work. And I will never forget, for obvious reasons, you know, because it's Germany, the epic semifinal at the Westfalenstadion, I was there. How in a game where, you know, for most of it, Germany were on the front foot and they're kind of getting battered, and it goes into extra time, or it's, you know, it's clearly going to go into extra time, maybe penalties, and Italy are hanging on. Marcello Lippi's solution is to send on Iaquinta and Del Piero. So he sends on two more strikers, right? Defense of Italian football. And Del Piero says, and he basically told us, like, go and just work your butt off like a defender. But the minute you get the ball, remember who you are. And Del Piero, what he did in that game on both sides, just defending with the whole crowd against him, because obviously it's the World Cup in Germany. And then, of course, you know, popping up at the other end, Gilardino setting up Del Piero's goal. I mean, that was absolutely tremendous. I think right. That World Cup was a World Cup which signaled to a lot of people in Italy that, you know what, Del Piero isn't really kind of this wet fish. Like, he is somebody who, he's not just a construct. He suffered with the rest of us.
Yeah. And he was going to suffer more. Because that summer then, Juve make their famous trip down to Serie B. And there's an exodus of stars. Cannavaro, Zambrotta, Vieira, Ibrahimovic, Turan all make their way out of the club. Del Piero and Buffon famously stay on. So this guy's just won the world title, and now there he is in Serie B, making his way around the Campionato Cadetto.
But I think there was a sense from Del Piero, I think he said it at the time, like, you know, I won a load of titles, I won a World Cup, I won the Champions League. This is my team. This is me giving back to Juve. And let's face it, too, with the wages he was on, it's not as if other teams were queuing up go and sign Del Piero. And he was very honest about this. And I go back to his image, you know, I remember Del Piero lived with his mom until he got married. I remember an interview where he talked about, you know, how he went to this must have been like 02, 03 or something, about how Madonna came to Padova, I think, or somewhere on tour, and he went to the, you know, he says like, yeah, I went to the Madonna concert with my mom. And it's like, you know, you're a footballer in your late 20s, and, you know, one of his big things would, like, he'd sit around the kitchen table with his family. When I say family, I mean his parents, because at the time he said he didn't get married until later, you know, and play cards or play board games on a Friday night. This isn't really in keeping with kind of the superstar ethos. So there definitely was a simplicity to him. And when we say he went on a journey, I think that's a big part of it as well.
Golazo! 2008, then, he's once again player of the year. I mean, that's how they've returned to Serie A. They're not enjoying the successes that they will do later under Antonio Conte. But how much do you remember about his form that year?
He scored a bunch of goals. I remember that.
Okay.
But I don't.
All right, and he continues to do so right up until he finally calls it quits, or rather the club call it quits on him, because controversially, early in the 2011-2012 season, Andrea Agnelli announces to a stockholders meeting that they're not going to renew the contract of the man who is the symbol of their team. He accepts it kind of with his usual kind of quiet irony.
He does, and when we talked about this before within the context of Juventus, but, you know, after the Avvocato Gianni Agnelli, after he passes, there's that period where, and obviously the next generation, for different reasons, has also passed and aren't. So it's like down to the grandkids. And there's two branches of the grandkids. There's the Andrea Agnelli side, and there's the John and Lapo Elkann side. And the John and Lapo Elkann side were the side who took over post-Calciopoli. Because there was that period in between where there was kind of, after Agnelli had passed and they took over, there was that period when they were run by the triad of Moggi, Giraldo, and other people who fell upon hard times for reasons we know. The Elkanns were Del Piero loyalists. They very much appreciated him and they very much stuck with him. Andrea Agnelli, who after he took over, I'm not saying he didn't like Del Piero, but he obviously took the club in a very different direction from the Elkanns. And again, we discussed that within Calciopoli and suing to get the titles back and whatever.
And ultimately was really successful doing it.
I'm not going to argue with his success, but I think he was more businesslike about it and less emotional about it. I think he probably even thought back to, you know, when he was younger and those 2004-2006 seasons, which in his mind, Juve won the title sul campo and Calciopoli never happened. And Del Piero isn't really part of that narrative, right? That narrative is Trezeguet, it's Ibra, it's Fabio Capello shouting on the bench. You know, that's what it is. And I think he looks at it and he says, like, this dude's 35 years old at this point. Like, you know, why does he need to be here?
So, after 19 seasons and an incredible career, second Italian player after Paolo Maldini to participate in seven major international tournaments. You've got 4 Euros and 3 World Cups. Third on the all-time list of free kick goals in Serie A behind Pirlo and, of course, Sinisa. And just title after title with Juventus, European Cup, so many honours. Anyway, it all finally came to an end. 13th of May 2012, Juve at home to Atalanta, now in their new stadium, the Juventus Stadium. That day, he scores his last goal for Juventus, and then in the 57th minute, he's called off to make his goodbye to Juve, and the longest goodbye, basically. He high-fives everybody on the pitch. officials, opponents, everybody goes and sits down, and the game eventually gets started again. And then the crowd are just singing Del Piero sotto la curva, so he gets up and takes their applause. And then about, what, 10 minutes later, he has to go out and he starts doing this lap of honour. It seems to go on forever, and there's a football match going on almost in the background while he does this parade, followed by various dignitaries around the four sides of the pitch.
There was at least one person there who was kind of annoyed.
Would this be the
person who was follically challenged?
Who used to be his teammate back in the Lippi days, right?
Yeah, and it wasn't blaming him, but it was just kind of blaming the way it played out. You know, they were winning their first title since Calciopoli, right? He had arrived, well, Antonio Conte here, you know, in the summer. They'd bought this guy named Pirlo, who he didn't want, or they signed him on a free because he didn't fit his 4-2-4 formation. He had freaking Milos Krasic, or whatever his name was like his big summer signing. He's like, what the hell? Now, on top of that, we've succeeded in doing this. It's been tremendous. I don't have any strikers. I don't have any top player, as he calls them. And now there's this freaking circus because Del Piero's retiring. I remember quite distinctly that he wasn't happy with it. But what it also showed, I think, is how I genuinely think Juve thought that we'll substitute him, he'll clap, he'll wave, and then they'll all focus on the game again and celebrate the fact that, you know, we're winning the title at home on the last day of the season. But that's not what happened. They were so, even though it was the first post-Calciopoli title, the fans there that day were more intent on celebrating Del Piero, because I think they understood how Del Piero really represented all of them.
Yeah, and how much he'd given. I know the footballers receive a lot, but he'd certainly given. And yeah, if he went on a journey, probably a lot of people went on a journey with regard to Del Piero, a player who, as you mentioned, represented Juve. And it wasn't his fault that he played for a club that inspired hate and loathing and suspicion throughout the
Yeah, and it wasn't
90s.
His fault that he was shy and introverted.
And I would say that, I mean, we've both encountered him on many occasions, and I always found him to be one of the most thoughtful interviewees. I bumped into him last May. He's now, as you mentioned, living in Los Angeles, where he has a restaurant called Dieci, and he seemed really, really happy, very relaxed.
At peace with himself, I think.
Exactly.
I mean, again, I hate psychoanalyzing, but hey, screw it, let's do it. But he does strike you as somebody who, because, you know, the mama's boy thing was a big theme throughout his career. He strikes you as somebody who was an introvert, who went out of his way to try to please everybody throughout his career, didn't develop that much of a personality, as I said, because he played as a striker for Juve during the Calciopoli years and immediately before.
Well, at least didn't, that in the kind of media sense, he wasn't displaying that much. I think he had personality, as he wouldn't have got through what he got through.
No, he had a tremendous personality, but it was a different kind of internal strength, slow burn. And I think beyond that, I think once he got married, once he kind of moved out of it, you realize that there's actually a lot of substance to him.
When two seasons in Australia, that takes a bit of getting up on stage with Eros Ramazzotti and singing Eros' songs to the crowd. That
exactly.
Also takes a,
you know, and you realize, I mean, there's people in football with different, you know, with different mindsets. And the thing about him is, like, it's not just a quiet footballer thing, right? Because Paul Scholes was also famously a quiet footballer who never spoke. But Paul Scholes, he gave you the sense that he was sort of a fighter as well. Del Piero didn't give that. It was weird to me. It was, even as you could see him sprinting time and again and putting in effort, he never gave that impression.
One last thought then on Alessandro Del Piero?
Obviously a phenomenal talent and everything else, and a Juve legend, but also somebody who opened a lot of people's eyes about the journey and judging people and how people change and evolve and adapt, and a guy with layers of complexities that many of us didn't know weren't there.
So is that what would have been in your letter to your younger self about Del Piero?
Yeah, I would have been like, you know, don't put this guy down just because he gets injured. Don't put him down because
he plays for Juve.
No, it's not the playing for Juve. It was that little smirk.
It was, though.
It was, no, look. Like, Gianluca Vialli played for Juve, too.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's Gigi Buffon played for Juve for a long time.
That's right.
There's a certain personality. It's not like if you play for Juve, automatically everybody hates you, right? People love Buffon. People love Cannavaro.
All right, then. Alessandro Piero, one of the good guys, one of the great players, and an absolute icon of Italian football. And now, next week, we should be joined again by another icon of the world of calcio, James Horncastle. will be back from his plumbing issues. But Gab, you made it at least. And so did you, listener.
I use Pimlico Plumbers.
That's nice.
I know you're a big fan of as well.
Gotta love what they do. Gotta love the way they feel. Anyway, I feel we've all been on a bit of a journey ourselves, so why not join us again next Wednesday for another little voyage into the back catalogue of Calcio. For now, from all of us here, it's arrivederci. Campionato
di calcio italiano. You've been listening to Galazzo, the totally Italian football show. It's a Muddy Knees Media production, and for sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Check out our other football shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audioboom, and everywhere else you get your audio on demand.
Cold days like this are cruel. You cough, you splutter, so does your car. Its battery, dead, killed by an icy claw. Will anyone stand up to winter? Yes, you. Come to Halfords. We fit new batteries on the spot from just £15. And we're open late, 7 days a week. Find your local store now at halfords.com. Ready for the cold snap? Ready for anything. Halfords, for life's journeys.
Batteries sold separately. Selected vehicles only. In most stores, opening times vary.